This is the Detroit Sports Podcast Network.
The biggest icon in podcasting.
Welcome in, everybody, to this week's edition of the Doc and Jock Wrestling Podcast. I'm your host, Adam the Jock Straczynski. On today's show, on Monday night, a WWE superstar was detained. And could the bloodline be getting stronger? We're going to talk about all of that later on in the show. We've got Elimination Chamber results we've got to get to. We've got a question surrounding the bloodline and Cody Rhodes. We've got a brand new pay-per-view that we've got to get through with AEW with Revolution coming out on Sunday. We've got to talk about some of the hijinks and shenanigans that went on with the Go Home show. There's a lot for us to get into and helping me break it all down, sort it all out, make sense of this wonderful wild world of wrestling is the one, the only, the Doc, John Macaroon. What's up, cuz?
Man, what a fascinating week of wrestling, highlighted by The Rock's 20-minute Instagram promo that I thought kind of bridged the gap in regards to the new age way of doing promo and the old way. It was stellar. If you haven't had a chance to see it and listen to it all, I know it's long, but oh my God, does The Rock start to blur the lines of reality? It just really, for me, just excited my passion for WrestleMania. But some of the announcements that maybe come out from SmackDown, I'm a little disappointed in. We'll talk about that. Boy, Elimination Chamber was great to watch. It was, even though it was predictable, I can't wait to recap it because I thought it was a pay-per-view that even though you knew what was going to happen, someone got it, I think, all right. It was something that set the table for what we're going to see over the next 30 days.
Yeah, and I think that's where we should start because sometimes predictable and being very predictable isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's how it's delivered to you. And this pay-per-view was incredibly predictable. So predictable, you got everything right, like you teased. And we're going to talk about that and what that means for calling the card after we get through these results. We did get a match that we did not cover on our preview. Last minute, they did add the WWE Women's Tag Team match to this, where the Kabuki Warriors defended their titles and defeated Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell. Indy Hartwell is from Australia, so it only made sense for them to include her on this card. Becky Lynch emerges victorious in the Elimination Chamber. She now earns the right to battle for the Women's World Championship at WrestleMania. She'll be looking to take on Rhea Ripley for that. Now, this match was good, but it was clunky at times. With all these competitors in a match like this, I think you're going to get some of that clunk, some of that herky-jerky, right? We both know that styles really make matches. This is a really weird match because you've got multiple competitors going at it at once, and everybody kind of gets their time to shine. And sometimes wrestlers don't match up as good as they possibly should with other wrestlers. So you're going to get some of that clunkiness, some of that herky-jerkiness. Did any of that take away from this match for you, or was this match just good enough and it was fine the way it was?
It was crazy because you saw somebody that's supposedly supposed to be a heel become a fan favorite. And I think that it was great. Obviously, I think Tiffany Stratton is going to be a star. And it was crazy. I think she overshadowed the whole match. I think that when she gets eliminated, the crowd's deflated. They're not happy. And you recognize, oh my goodness, WWE's got something here. Whatever she does, whether she's a babyface or a heel, I think she's an emerging star because she's got something that a lot of wrestlers take years to develop, which is a connection to the crowd. The crowd seems to like her, love her, and it's going to be interesting to see, does she continue to be a heel even though the crowd really is into her? And I just thought, yeah, the match itself, you know, had moments that you say could have been improved, but by and large, I think Becky Lynch did the job to showcase why she's the lady that needs to step across the ring from Bianca Belair.
Yeah, and you can even see the follow-up on Friday night on SmackDown with Tiffany Stratton. She's over. The fans love her. She's over. I don't know if I've ever remember a wrestler coming on this quickly and being loved this fast, especially when they're a heel. So it'll be interesting to see how they book her going forward and kind of where she goes, because right now, like you said, she's the hottest thing in WWE. She's one of the hottest things in WWE. Next, we had the undisputed WWE Tag Team Champions, the Judgment Day, who ended up defeating New Catch Republic. What'd you think of this match? This was one of those matches where they really sold Judgment Day possibly losing, but again, numbers game. Dominic Mysterio gets involved, costs the New Catch Republic a chance to leave here victorious. Thought it was a good match. I thought it did its job. It told a good story, and again, predictable, but not horrible. Thought this was good.
Yeah, absolutely. I just think that you realize what's great about WWE is the mid-card has the potential now to do a lot of good things. And I just look at it and I say, WWE is in a great spot where I think for one of the first times in a long time, there's a good balance of really intriguing shit at the top. And then those that are on their way up really have been given good stuff. And everybody, I think, really, which was good, which you sometimes don't expect, is when you're traveling to Perth, is that a lot of people wanted to show off for that massive crowd. I thought the setup was great. I thought that the crowd was really into it. And like we always say, when you have a crowd that's into a pay-per-view, you can have a lot of different style of matches and the crowd will resonate. And I just thought, man, all throughout, nothing really lagged in this pay-per-view, even though it did kind of go long.
Yeah, this was one of those things where it really did kind of feel like it was go from the moment that the show opened, which was really, really nice. You're right, no lag. You brought up the ring and the setup. Did you hear? So it was, we had already recorded, the show was already in the can, and I believe it was Friday afternoon, had it been later in the day, there was a report that came out that WWE's ring, their setup for the Elimination Chamber, you know how it is so large, it is massive as it is, well, they have to ship it across the sea to get it to Australia. It's not one of those things that they can just kind of break down and then they put it like in a FedEx box and they mail it. They like load it on a boat and they ship it. Did you hear the story about how their boat was detained by pirates?
Yeah, that's crazy, right? Where they have to kind
like,
of...
Wrestling this year is one of those stories where it is like the coolest adventure book you've ever read. Like some of the stuff just sounds so freaking made up. But it's real life. Like WWE is living its best life in the wildest way right now. It's absolutely nuts.
Could you imagine Triple H just sitting in his chair and he gets a text? We have an issue. We're going to have to divert the cage because pirates are trying to take it. And he's like, what? And we got to now ship it from Miami to California, California all the way to, we got to have it monitored. He probably had to figure out costs to get it protected. He's like, God darn it. We got to pay another $100,000. To make sure that the boat is surrounded so that pirates don't take our cage. Could you imagine pirates taking a picture with the Elimination Chamber if they decide to like store it somewhere else and then just like create? But I don't think pirates.
It's like the craziest story, man.
It is crazy. But let's be thankful that the cage and the Elimination Chamber got to Perth, thankfully.
Yeah, thankfully. That way the pay-per-view could go on. Speaking of the pay-per-view going on, we had Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins. They end up challenging the Bloodline on the Grayson Waller effect. And then they took out Austin Theory. And look, I thought it was cool to see these two guys kind of do what they do. Cut promos, Cody Rhodes challenges The Rock and challenges the Bloodline. I thought the big thing coming out of this was Grayson Waller's reaction to Austin Theory getting annihilated. Austin Theory just gets wiped out by both Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins. And Grayson Waller just takes two steps back, puts his hands up, and is like, all right, well, go ahead, guys. You're going to take him out? Take him out. These are supposed to be two friends, and Grayson Waller just let Austin Theory get just demolished, didn't even attempt to save him. Now, initially when I seen this, I was like, oh, we're building to something later on where these two might split. After what I seen on Friday Night SmackDown, I'm not so sure. In the moment, what was your thought on watching Grayson Waller just get annihilated, or I'm sorry, Austin Theory get annihilated and Grayson Waller just kind of take two steps back?
Yeah, no, I thought Grayson Waller really in his hometown – we said that we thought maybe Grayson Waller would get his ass kicked. So we kind of had an idea that something was going to come from the talk with Seth and Cody, and there was some big news there as well. But yeah, it was interesting, and it is something down the road. Maybe next week we'll talk about what they're doing with Theory, because it kind of seems like maybe his affiliation with Vince McMahon, the way he's been kind of used the last couple months, it feels like he's kind of been a stagnated character, and you got to kind of rejuvenate it. And I think with Grayson Waller, if they do end up feuding, I think there's some things you can do there. But I think Austin Theory needs a character infusion of a little bit more intrigue, a little bit more. Like, it just seems like he's there, but he's not just a guy. He's a talented performer. So I thought that Grayson Waller would get his ass kicked, but in the end, the boys, Cody Rhodes and Seth, did their thing with Austin Theory, which I thought was great. And I just thought Grayson Waller was just really had a good time. And those that were Australian, they got to come home, really got to enjoy being back home and to showcase what Australia and the fans are all about. So I thought it was a great segment. But damn, bro, can't overlook Cody Rhodes called out The Rock and said, anytime, anywhere, you did this, let's go. And I was like, whoa, that was good, because I think that's a match now where we start to look at it. Wait a minute. If The Rock can put over Roman, if The Rock can start putting over Cody Rhodes and start getting into that, oh my goodness. And it's a match I think everybody wants to see eventually at some point, maybe even SummerSlam. Rock versus Cody is going to be something stellar to pay attention to, especially if you kick it off with a 20-minute Instagram promo from The Rock. Holy cow. I was just like, let's go. Let's have the match on Monday. I don't care. Put it up. Give it to us. And I can't wait to see it. And I just thought that whole segment did what it was supposed to do. And that's the whole point of these talking segments. Make it so that the next thing that's going to happen be intriguing. And that's what they did.
Yeah, they did a really nice job. This was one of those things where when we were looking at the card, I was like, what are we going to do here? Like, how is this going to play a part? And I think, like you said, if you're going to do these, they got to mean something, and they got to help build and push out the story. And I think this did. I think it kind of helped set stuff up. Like you said, you got the Instagram. You got what you got on Monday. We're going to talk about that. You also got the Instagram from Rock, and then you got what you got Friday night. So I think as a package deal, this really worked. It really helped to move this story along. And honestly, coming out of this week, I think this is the big story that's getting moved along right now. I think we're going to talk a little bit about Monday Night Raw. We're going to talk a little bit about Friday SmackDown. I don't necessarily feel like a whole lot else has really been moved along. Now we move into the men's Elimination Chamber. Drew McIntyre ends up emerging victorious from the Elimination Chamber for the right to challenge Seth Rollins for the World Heavyweight Championship at WrestleMania. Again, you're seeing this character development with Drew McIntyre. Randy Orton had this thing won dead to rights. Randy Orton was about to pin Drew McIntyre. You had Logan Paul put brass knucks on, turn around, and knock out Randy Orton, which helps set up what's going to take place at WrestleMania between those two guys, which should be a fantastic match. But you have outside interference, essentially, that allows Drew McIntyre to take advantage to get the pin. This is something we touched on last week. This is this new Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre was incredibly incensed and upset, and this is why he wanted to challenge the Bloodline, because somebody interfered in his match and forced him to lose. Now he is picking up victories with outside interference, and he's having no problems taking advantage of that to get what he wants. I really do like this new character development, this new emergence of Drew McIntyre. This is a completely different character than what he was giving us a few months ago. What are your thoughts on this new heel version of Drew McIntyre, willing to take the shortcuts, willing to cheat, willing to lie, willing to steal, willing to do whatever he has to do to win that World Heavyweight Championship?
That's the guy. And I think that when you got a performer like that and you can start, and many people will say being a heel is a little bit more easy in order to kind of amp up the person that you were. And I just think that the heel Drew McIntyre will have an opportunity to do a lot of good things. I just think that a character that we've seen evolve and been a guy that's been a company guy, had his run, unfortunately, when it was COVID, and I think he's going to start creating some memories. Now, there's been some speculation about his contract. I know maybe you'll touch on that, or we'll touch on that in the coming weeks. But in the end, whether he stays or goes, this run that he's had will probably be the best run that he has in the company. I think everybody recognizes that his experience, his, you know, the things that he's learned in the past, willingness to tap into some things that maybe you shouldn't say, but you say it anyway, it's just great. And I think that the one thing, though, in regards to the match, I thought the match played out the way in which you would in terms of the technical aspects, you know, and that's what we said, which I think if you listen to last week's preview, even though we were on vacation, you and I nailed it and said, look, this match should really spark off everything that could happen at WrestleMania for the men's, and it exactly did. You had the surprise with AJ Styles coming in, which was great. I think everybody's reaction was, dude flew 18 miles to attack LA Knight, huh? it was funny as hell. And yeah, it's not a big surprise. And I know many people were like, that's the surprise, AJ Styles, which is fine. I get it. It's not going to wow people, but I'd like to see that match. I think AJ Styles putting over LA Knight, even though it's going to suck to see, I think it's going to be a great match. And then you got LA Knight, which we'll talk about. I guess I'll ask you. LA Knight's probably going to feud with, Randy Orton is going to feud with Logan Paul. We'll talk about it because I think the IWC's reaction is really, Randy's kind of at a higher echelon than to fight a Logan Paul. But I'll disagree. But the one thing I want to complain about is, for some reason, I don't know if you saw it, but for some reason, at some points in the match, there was this weird dark shadow that kind of crept into the corner of the ring. And I don't know if it was a purple haze or whatever the hell that was. Something was going on with the presentation of that match that did not look right. If you go back and watch it, it kind of is glaring. Like when they went to a corner, it looked like there was a shadow and it was like really glaring. And I'm like, whoa, WWE usually puts on quality matchups, but to have a production snafu that's going on in such a big match, I thought was crazy. It was noticeable to me. And you're like, what the hell's going on here? This is not something that, you know, is the intern. Did they hire the Kenny intern that just forgot to push the button or forgot to put a lens over a camera to make this thing doesn't look right? But in the end, outside of the snafu, I don't know if you caught it, I just thought the biggest storyline is going to be now what's going to happen with the others at WrestleMania. Yeah, Seth taking on Drew, we want to see it. But at the same time, the other two matchups I think are going to be stellar. But, and one last thing, now we got to ask, what the hell's going to happen with Kevin Owens? What's he going to do? Because it felt like everybody got their feud, they got their matchup, except for Kevin Owens.
Yeah, I'm not sure what happens with Kevin Owens coming out of this. And look, I do want to touch on Drew McIntyre's contract. So there's been a lot of different information that's kind of come out the last couple of weeks. We've touched on it in the past, and the reason it has been worked into the news more is there are reports one day that he signed a new contract or that he's close to signing a new contract, and then it comes out a few days later that they're nowhere near being close on signing a new contract. And what has happened is Drew took some time off. Drew was injured, so they've extended his contract. And right now his contract is extended. He's much happier where he's at. It's not so much about the money. It's about the creative for his contract that really has him on the fence. He doesn't want to get put into a spot where he's unhappy with his creative. For quite a few months, he was very, very unhappy. And that's part of the reason why he went away. And then he got hurt. And so WWE is now using that time that he was away, dealing kind of with his frustrations with creative, and then dealing with that time when he was injured. They're using that to kind of extend out this contract. And that's where he's at right now. So not a whole lot of news on Drew McIntyre's contract, which is interesting because he keeps cutting these promos on CM Punk, and his contract should expire before CM Punk can come back. So it leads you to believe that if he's happy with what he's doing right now and he's happy with the vision for his creative, the thought process is he will sign a contract extension and he will have this match against CM Punk when CM Punk is healthy enough to return. But as of right now, really and truly, no news on the Drew McIntyre front besides kind of the same update that we've been giving, which is he's still on his old contract. They've extended the time. He seems to be in a much happier place than he was, say, 6-8 months ago. So it's kind of where we're at right now. I do not know what the plan for Kevin Owens is, but Kevin Owens will have something. We just got to kind of wait. You know what I'm saying? I do find it interesting the way the internet wrestling community has kind of, I guess, rallied around Randy Orton to kind of shit on Logan Paul. This is the thing. I think Logan Paul is an incredible wrestler. As much as you might not want to give him credit, he's an incredible wrestler. This is a guy who is very young in his career and has stepped in and has done everything asked of him, and every match he gets in is pretty awesome. He does not have big snafus in his matches. He does not have big botches. He seems to be a world-class athlete, and he seems to be a guy who takes this very serious. I think if you want to do a comparison and you want to get upset and you want to get frustrated about anything, look at a wrestler like Jade Cargill. Jade Cargill was heavily protected in AEW, and you know what? She bet on herself, and she got a massive payday from WWE. She got to WWE, and WWE was like, well, what the hell do we do with her? Because she can't remember any of her spots, and she's way too green for us to put her out there and to work safely. So what do we do with her? So WWE keeps her in the background. They do a couple of skits in the back. They throw her in a Royal Rumble where she gets basically 15 seconds of fame for throwing Nia Jax out of the ring. But she hasn't done anything since, and she hasn't done anything at all. So they can't do anything with her because she can't get herself to the level that a guy like Logan Paul, who is competing in main events at massive pay-per-views, is a guy who has taken to the sport like a fish to water, is a guy who has been in the ring with some of the biggest names and some of the smallest names in the business and hasn't hurt anybody, hasn't caused an issue. There hasn't been a botch anywhere. There hasn't been anything that's been of note. I mean, we talked about Logan Paul basically saving Rey Mysterio's life in a match that they had because Rey ended up slipping, couldn't tuck his head. Logan Paul adjusted the move in mid-move to save Rey Mysterio's life and not break his neck. Like, you have to think, that is awesome. That is insane. Like, the typical wrestler can't do that. Yet this guy who is this green has the ability to do that. So him being in a match with Randy Orton, who, yes, Randy Orton at this stage of his career is in an upper echelon, but also at this stage of his career needs to be protected a little bit because his back isn't 100% and his back isn't going to be 100%. I think this is a fantastic match, and I think it's interesting. You've got the old versus the new wrestler here, you know? And it's funny to talk about Randy Orton being old because Randy Orton was that new wrestler, and we remember watching him kind of transition. But Randy Orton is now up there in years. Randy Orton is also up there on the card. This, I think, is a fantastic match, and this makes sense. They did a great job to build the story. I don't think Logan Paul gets enough credit for being as good as he is, as quickly as he is, become a awesome wrestler. So I think the internet wrestling community might need to kind of pipe down and just kind of chill out. We ended up getting our women's world championship match where we had Rhea Ripley defending against Nia Jax. No big surprise here, right? The hometown girl, the girl that this entire pay-per-view was basically built around, Rhea Ripley, ends up defeating Nia Jax. I don't think there's a whole lot to really talk about here. The match was kind of built up around her being able to do the riptide to Nia Jax. She ends up hitting the move. The place explodes. She gets the 1-2-3, and now she gets to move on to WrestleMania to challenge Becky Lynch. There may be a bit of a swerve coming with that match, and I think that might be the talking point. And that occurred from Monday night, where Becky interfered with a match with Nia Jax. Nia Jax was having a match with Liv Morgan, and it seems like the crowd is really on Liv Morgan, possibly getting inserted into the Becky Lynch Rhea Ripley match. Real quick, before we lay out what took place with calling the card, I kind of want to get your sense. Liv Morgan ends up losing in the Elimination Chamber to Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch now taking on Rhea Ripley. There's this storyline going on between Becky Lynch and Nia Jax. Liv Morgan's kind of caught in the crossfire. Would you want to see a triple threat match between Rhea Ripley, Liv Morgan, and Becky Lynch at WrestleMania?
No, I don't want to see that. First and foremost, nobody has taken advantage more of the John McEnroe rub than Rhea Ripley. My goodness, since she met me and took a photo, her career has ascended to heights that we didn't even think could be possible. What a megastar. I thought her entrance was sweet. She almost had to shake herself from getting chills. You knew that returning home and given the love, the way in which Triple H definitely returned the favor and made her feel special, you knew it hit home. Her entrance was special. It was great. Man, and all kidding aside, she's a megastar. And you only realize she's 27 years old. So we could be looking at a decade of a star that's going to feud with so many people. No, the feud's with Becky Lynch. I think it's great. Liv Morgan, you got to find something relevant for her. And, you know, probably at some point, I think what should happen is they need to kind of set up a mid-tier title for the women. I think at this point, you got so many women, like not maybe even a women's intercontinental title. I mean, just be blatant about it and give them a title that a lady like Liv Morgan could win at WrestleMania, because it'd be perfect. I mean, it could be Liv Morgan versus Nia Jax, or Liv Morgan versus any, or you have a battle royal, or you have, you know, where you get a lot more women involved. At some point, Jade Cargill, I do expect to actually get her in-ring work up to snuff. But I do like the fact that they're treating her like an attraction. It makes us want to see her more. So I think, listen, trust WWE and what they're doing with the women. They're trying to take it to a different level. And you can see where Triple H gives Rhea Ripley the respect and has her main event a pay-per-view for the first time in, I think, several years. I think since the first time a woman's headlined a pay-per-view since WrestleMania. It's been a long time. So in my mind, let's sit back and see how it develops. But Becky Lynch needs to stare across the ring from Rhea Ripley. And I think in these big matchups, triple threats, I just don't think have hit me where I'm like, oh my God, do you remember the triple threat from? No, man, I like Rock, Hogan, Michaels, Bret Hart. Triple threats don't do it for me.
Yeah, I don't like triple threats either. I prefer the one-on-one. I would be really bummed if Liv Morgan gets inserted into that match. As much as I like Liv Morgan, I don't feel she needs to get inserted into that match right now. All right, let's take a quick look at calling the card. Doc got it all right. Doc predicted everything 100%. He takes a commanding 2-point lead with one event left that we're going to touch on here very shortly. That's going to be AEW's Revolution. Before we get to that, though, on Monday night, we talked about this. I think the big storyline that got moved along was what we're doing at WrestleMania, and it sounds like we now have our main event for night one. So on Monday night, Cody, the Bloodline Hunter, which I love the nickname, the Bloodline Hunter, Rhodes, called out The Rock. On Friday, The Rock responded with one, his Instagram message, but then he was also on Friday Night SmackDown, and he ends up responding and essentially lays out a challenge for a WrestleMania 40 tag team match where Cody and Seth will take on Roman and The Rock. Now, there's a stipulation where if Cody and Seth win, then the Bloodline will be barred from ringside. But if The Rock and Roman win, it's Bloodline rules, which means they can do whatever they want, and there's no outside interference, no issues here whatsoever. Match can't get called off, and it really puts a lot of leverage in Roman's corner then. One, I want to get your thoughts on the attached stipulation for this match, and I want to know what you think about this being the main event of night one.
Hell yeah. Look, I get it. Look, for me, we all wanted to see Roman versus Cody, but to interject more wrestling, look, wrestlers can wrestle back-to-back days. Why not? But you also take a risk. You know, in a match of that caliber, are the boys going to go extra? Is somebody going to walk away injured? And here's the best part. I think that they're setting it up so that Cody can have all the odds stacked against him. I think it's a great way for the Bloodline to win. And I do think that it's going to be great. I think The Rock and Roman should win that match. And I think I'm going to stick to that prediction unless something greatly changes. I think it should be Bloodline rules. All the world, all the odds stacked against Cody. And then some way, somehow, he overcomes it to become the champion. I just think that's just going to be great. And to see the
You know what's messed up? I was thinking the same exact thing.
Exactly.
I was thinking the same thing.
Like, yes.
Those two should win this match.
They have to. And I think that now to see the way in which Dwayne Johnson, we can call him Dwayne McMahon. I love the line. There's just a small line where he says, look, you know what? I'm going to say it. I did blur the line. I'm the TKO director, Seth. And if you don't shut down and shut down your big fat mouth, that belt that you got, I'll just take it off you real quick. And I love the fact that he said, I'm the boss. I'm not just somebody that's running WWE. I'm on the board of directors for life for TKO. And you started to see, holy shit, how relationships work. I don't know if you caught all that where he said, oh, the Netflix person I'm a friend with. Oh, this person I'm a friend with. Oh, Ari Emanuel, who's my agent. I was a longtime advocate and agent. I know him. Could you imagine if, you know, you're The Rock and you develop these relationships and Netflix comes and is like, oh my gosh, we're going to need you to be part of all this and get into the world behind the scenes. And he's like, absolutely. The Rock can be Triple H. Could you imagine The Rock and Triple H working hand in hand to run the WWE? I was just like in awe of what he did there, blurring the lines of reality and what's going on in the WWE. I was like, this is crazy. This is great. Even though it's freaking 21 minutes long and he's hyperventilating like he's going to die talking and run out of breath. I was like, Dwayne, take a breath. You're doing a promo. You don't need to be panting. But he was so into it. I think that, man, I'm excited for it. And I think that, yes, WrestleMania 40 is going to be interesting. And I can't wait to see the bloodline against Seth and Cody. And then you could also set up the future as well regarding Seth and Cody and how that could look moving forward. You could even set up the summer based on that matchup. So I can't wait to see it. Could you imagine if the turn happens right there? Oh my God, Seth joins the bloodline. Oh my goodness, there's no chance Cody can win it. He's going to have the world against him. Nobody likes him. Nobody. Who's going to come to his aid? Maybe you get some guys come over from AEW to help him. I don't know what can happen, but there's so many ways to make it so that Sunday it looks like Cody against the world. So it was great. And The Rock's promo where he goes, I acknowledge. You also can have it where The Rock could turn on Roman and join with Cody.
They've done a good job booking this.
Good job of adding.
On Friday night when I was watching, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking, who's gonna turn on Roman?
Who's gonna turn on who? Do you have the debut of the other dudes that you're hearing from the family joining? It's just gonna be amazing.
We'll touch on that a little bit later on.
Yeah, I can't. I just, it's exciting, and this is what storytelling at the highest level will accomplish. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I think everything that happened, right? I thought Monday was kind of a stale show. I thought Friday, your highlight was probably that first 25, 30 minutes of SmackDown. I thought that was probably the best part of it all. This was the real story that got moved along this week. I thought everything that you got from Cody and Cody interacting with Paul Heyman to what The Rock did, and really and truly, I think the unsung hero in a lot of this is Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns coming out to the ring looked awesome. And then he cuts into his promo where he wants to be acknowledged and he gets easily agitated and he's like, all right, well, we're out. We're leaving. Let's go. And Paul Heyman's got to kind of whimper and be like, no, we've got, you know, the other guy, he's got to come out. And they have to throw it to a commercial break. And going to the commercial break, Roman looks so agitated. And the whole time The Rock is out there for what felt like a 15, 20 minute promo, Roman is looking even increasingly more agitated. Really selling that as much as this might be on par, it might not be on par. They might not be on the same page, all the way up to where Roman has Rock acknowledge him. And I thought that was a nice little twist. That was a nice little moment. I thought this was done very, very well. We are kind of running up against it. Was there anything else from Raw or from SmackDown that you liked, that you wanted to talk about quickly?
Nope, it was all good, man. I thought it was a good week for WWE programming. Let's go. Now, switching our attention to AEW, I definitely watched Dynamite all the way through because we definitely were going to preview the pay-per-view. And here's my note. I didn't care. Like, I thought the matches, I wrote, all this stuff that's out here is put together. I get it. But I asked myself a deep question as the show was going on. Do I care about any of this? And I said, no, this is just a show. I'm interested because it's professional wrestling. But when you juxtapose it to WWE, in terms of my investment, it's like, man, Tony, you got to do a better job of explaining things. I thought that the one segment on AEW that got me out of my seat was Will Ospreay and his green leprechaun jumpsuit. I'm like, okay.
That was the most Will Ospreay promo you've ever seen in your entire life. Yes. That was great.
Yes. I'm like, you know what? It's time for the Doc to get into his green velvet jumpsuit phase. And I got to find a way to start looking like that. You know what I mean? I see Troy Weaver from the Pistons donning his, relaxed outfit. It's time for me to roll around in some green all the way in a tracksuit and looking like that. I thought it was great. Other than that, I just thought that, you know, AEW needs to do a much better job in the next year of making me care about these characters. Because otherwise, from this pay-per-view, I just basically care about Will Ospreay and Sting, and that's about it. The rest of it needs to have some meaning so that we can move ahead. I don't care about this pay-per-view. Basically, my care level is a 3.
That was my note. Coming out of this was a go-home show. And this go-home show didn't make me want to buy this pay-per-view. I don't feel like spending the $50, $60 to get this pay-per-view. There was nothing here that really helped set anything else up on Sunday. Didn't do anything to really establish anything that made me want to go out and spend the money to see. It was, yeah, there's stories and there are things going on, but it's just things. And you're right. What keeps me interested is the fact that it was professional wrestling. There was one moment where I popped, and we'll get to that when we get down the card here, when we're giving our predictions, and I'll tell you what it was. But otherwise, this was not interesting to me, and I have really zero interest in this pay-per-view. It is going to be a tough sell. I'm sure the action will be fantastic on Sunday, but it's going to be a tough watch for me because I just don't have any interest in kicking it off with little to no interest. Orange Cassidy versus Roderick Strong. Look, man, I don't necessarily care how this plays out. I don't necessarily know how this plays out. I think Orange Cassidy has done a fantastic job with his title. I believe he should probably keep his title. But if you're trying to build up a faction that you have done nothing but undermined and continued to bury, Roderick Strong should probably win the AEW International Championship. So, I'm not 100% sure how this is going to go. How do you think this one plays out?
Yeah, this might be our shortest predictions. 9 matches, because this could go 4.5 hours. I'm like, oh my God, dude, it's a Sunday. It's after a long week of work. It might be something where I break it up, but in terms of how I watch it. But obviously, we all want to see Sting. Yeah, exactly. Like, okay, Orange Cassidy's had some great matches, but okay, I mean, I can't see the belt on Roderick Strong, so give me Orange Cassidy. He retains, baby, and I just hope there's a couple nice spots for both to kind of get some attention.
Yeah, look, like I said, I think Orange Cassidy should keep his belt. You've done nothing to really sell the United the Undisputed Kingdom. They've done nothing but undermine it consistently with their booking. If you wanted to make that group look strong, Roderick Strong should win this belt. But Orange Cassidy has been fantastic, and I think he's a crowd favorite, so I think he wins. You got the tag team champion, or you got a tag team match. You got Claudio Castagnoli and John Moxley versus FTR. I'm going to go with FTR here. Again, this was recently created. I don't really know if there's a whole lot here. I think you just need a way to get FTR and John Moxley and Claudio Castagnoli on the card, so I'll go FTR.
Yeah, give me the pop too. FTR, baby. I think this has a chance to be a good match. Could be aggressive with some spots that make you go, ooh. So FTR, baby, let's have a good match.
All right, we've got the TNT Championship match. Christian Cage defending his belt versus Daniel Garcia. How do you see this one playing out?
I see a lot of cheating. I see a lot of involvement. So give me Christian Cage. Probably an 8-minute match. It's hopefully Daniel Garcia gets a little bit of the rub, but he's got no chance to win it.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Just looking at it, it's like it's Christian. It's going to be one of those wonky, weird matches. Daniel Garcia is doing a great job kind of getting himself up and over. Kind of hit a bit of a lull there for a minute, but I just don't think they take the belt off Christian Cage right now. We have a pivot that was done, and you were told about it on Wednesday night. You've got an 8-man all-star scramble match. In this match, the winner will earn a shot at the AEW World Championship match. It's going to be Chris Jericho, Powerhouse Hobbs, Wardlow, Lance Archer, Hook, Brian Cage, Magnus, and Dante Martin. Now, the winner of this match, if you pick the correct person, you get a bonus point. As we kind of go through this card, I still have a chance to win this. I've got to get very specific things correct, though. And this is one of those things that I have to be very specific about and that I have to get correct to give me a shot to win our calling the card, as you now have a 2-point lead on me. I am going to go with Wardlow for the win for this match. Like I said, I think at some point you've got to make the Undisputed Kingdom relevant. I think this is a guy you can do it around. He gets a shot at the AEW Championship. You can then spark him off, like roll him off into a feud. there's just more booking I feel you can do with him. So I'm going to pick Wardlow here for this match and for the bonus point.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, there's no way not to pick Wardlow because, I mean, you think about it, he had the promo. You've seen a guy that has been so underutilized. My note says, Wardlow, are they going to make the man relevant again? You look at Powerhouse Hobbs. I think if it's not Wardlow, it's going to be Hobbs. But you look at Wardlow in the run that he's had. He got so hot with the power bombs, getting into it with MJF. You recognize, okay, now if the person that we think is going to win the title wins the title, you need to have some realistic feuds. And you have to elevate Powerhouse Hobbs. Or you have to elevate Hobbs as well because he's a monster, but you have to elevate Wardlow. Wardlow has been somebody that, you know, I know has been dealing with things and it's been hot and cold, but my goodness, do you have somebody that can be a tank? And it's time to bring him back. And you can't have him just be a bit player in a faction. That's Wardlow. And I think that having him win, no doubt about it, I think is the right choice. And if he doesn't win, I think something's seriously wrong with booking. When I saw this, I was like, oh, this is the easiest prediction ever. It's got to be Wardlow. He sticks out and he deserves an opportunity.
All right. That brings us to our AEW Continental Crown Championship. You have Eddie Kingston defending his three belts versus Bryan Danielson. Who wins this?
I have to go with Eddie Kingston. I think that he got his ass beat on Dynamite, and it was kind of a situation in which you see a performer that needs to continue to validate his role. I think that he's going to have great matches. This one probably is going to be really aggressive as well. I think those two might have an opportunity to have a real good match together, but I think Eddie Kingston retains.
My prediction is a lot of red chests and a lot of bruised chests coming out of this match. Look, I love Eddie Kingston. Eddie Kingston is one of my favorites. I think you're right in your estimation. This is a guy who has to keep elevating himself. And I think at this point, Bryan Danielson can really help elevate him. On the television show, the announcers basically said, Eddie Kingston doesn't care if he wins or loses, which makes him a dangerous man. Eddie Kingston only wants to earn the respect of Bryan Danielson. He wants Bryan Danielson to shake his hand on the way out of the ring. That is his goal. I think he accomplishes that. I'm going to pick Eddie Kingston as well. We've got the AEW World Tag Team Championship. This is Sting's retirement match. You've got Darby Allin and Sting defending versus the Young Bucks. This will be Sting's last match, which I think makes this prediction incredibly easy. But I do want to take a moment to talk about what made me pop on Dynamite.
Yeah.
They were setting all of this up. You had the Young Bucks in the ring. They had their baseball bats. They were basically looking for Sting. And all of a sudden, music hits. They walk up the ramp to go meet him halfway. And it was at that moment, this was so predictable. But again, sometimes predictability is not bad if it's done well. I was like, Sting's going to come down from the rafters. Sting's going to come down from the rafters. And all of a sudden, there was a 12-year-old watching AEW Dynamite. As I was popping and screaming and cheering from my bed, I was like, oh my God, this is awesome. This is awesome. This is awesome. It was pretty horribly done. But to me, it was so reminiscent of what I used to watch when I was a kid. And it was really cool for Sting to give me that last little bit of nostalgia, or want to be able to give me that last little bit of nostalgia. The only thing that would have made that better is if there would have been a cut to Sting in the rafters where all you could see is his white face paint and everything else was black. All you see is the white face paint, and then he descends. That would have been the only thing that would have been better, because that would have took me back to those WCW days where Sting went and became the Crow, and he was living in the rafters, and he was just causing havoc for the NWO for basically a year, year and a half long period. It was one of the greatest storylines that we had. Finished in a match that wasn't very good, but still one of my favorites. I think Young Bucks win this. Sting's going out. Sting is a guy who believes in the business and does the business. And for the business, the guy who is on the way out the door always puts over the next crop. Young Bucks, I don't necessarily know if they're the next crop, but I believe he's going to do the solid, put the Young Bucks over. Young Bucks end up with the AEW World Tag Team Champions.
Yeah, no doubt. And it has to be that way. And you can still celebrate Sting after the match, the balloons and all that, the talks and the emotions, all that. But what's crazy is if you look at AEW right now, there's really only one white hot heel, and that's Christian. I think that the Young Bucks have the opportunity to take that mantle by beating up Sting in his last match and doing their thing. And yeah, Young Bucks, I think this version of them is interesting. And I do think that moving forward, them having the titles, retiring Sting is a nice little mantle for them. And I do think that it was great. And the other thing, too, I noted for Sting coming from the rafters is you use the back shot where you see his back and he kind of looks like a dead rag doll. I think they should have used the front view or a different angle where you could kind of see both, where you could see Sting's face and everything like that coming down. But in the end, it was great. We all popped to see it. You know, morbidly, we all said, okay, when he was coming down, please, please don't break, you know, please don't let anything, you know, you just have to. But luckily they came out and said that Tony Khan reached out to the family and asked permission to make sure that nobody's traumatized, because I'm shocked that they're still doing guys coming from the rafters in 2024, if you know what I mean. And, just keeping it positive. Sting deserves all the accolades. It's an end of a run. Sting had a better run in AEW than he ever did in WWE. I still can't believe they had Sting come to WrestleMania and lose to Triple H, which was crazy because Triple H was already a legend. I think that you needed to give Sting a WrestleMania moment. But in the end, Sting has a storied career, and his run with AEW was fine. And I think he did what he needed to do by elevating Darby Allin into somebody that can be the mini Sting in regards to the face paint and his career. So congrats, Sting. Thank you for everything you did. You know, we were 12, 10 years old watching you be the surfer guy, have the run at WCW, the brief stint at WWE, and all the work you did at TNA. You had a great career, and I think he'll be an asset if he's given a prominent position in AEW.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. If you really want to read something really nice, Darby Allin did a real nice job with the Players Tribune writing an article about what Sting has meant to him. It's a really good read. If you have a chance, take a look at it. This will then transition us to our AEW Women's World Championship. We've got Toni Storm defending against Deonna Purrazzo. How do you see this one playing out?
Interesting. I'm a big fan of Toni Storm. I think that she's doing a lot of good things to give the attention to the women. So I got Toni Storm.
I agree with you. Look, I think this is the best version that we've seen of Toni Storm. She looks the most comfortable. I think it's interesting. I think the camera work and the production that they've done with this character for Toni Storm has been absolutely incredible. The black and white, and they'll cut the screen right in half where half of it's black that Toni Storm is on. The other half is in color where Deonna Purrazzo will be on. I think it is really, really interesting. I think this is a very good character. I think you've got a building story with her and Mariah May, where Mariah May will be the one to knock her off. And I think that will be a good story. I think that'll be interesting. I think Deonna Purrazzo is absolutely incredible. She's one of my favorite female wrestlers. Don't think she gets enough love. I think she's going to put on a hell of a match. We sometimes talk about getting over and being over. I think this will be the match that really helps Deonna Purrazzo be over. I think Toni Storm will get over in the match with the win, but I think this will really help elevate Deonna Purrazzo. If you don't know who she is, you're going to learn about her from this match. It should be incredible. Now, we have a triple threat match. I don't really know what the whole point of the segment was on Dynamite, where you had Hangman limp out to the ring, only to have Swerve come out, to then have Samoa Joe come out, to then have Swerve basically say, look, I threatened this man's kid. I broke into his house and cut a promo on a baby. I'm going to be the champion, only to see a deranged look in Hangman Page, who snaps and then breaks a crutch over the back of Swerve Strickland and then says he's going to be champion. Not really sure what Hangman was doing out there. I don't know what we were doing. I wasn't sure if he was going to tell us that he wasn't wrestling and then all of a sudden he's going to wrestle. None of it really made sense. Again, bad storytelling by Tony Khan and the creative team. I think we'll get a fantastic match, though, because Swerve and Hangman put on bangers. They put on great matches. Now you add in Samoa Joe. This is a consummate pro. This is a dude who gets it and tells great wrestling stories. Now, little caveat, it's a triple threat match. If you pick the right person to get this, you pick the right person and get it correct, you get a bonus point. So this match right here has a lot of weight on it. I want to know how you've got this going, because this might be the only way I can win is going opposite of you. So I'm curious how you are picking.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Well, I have a 2-point lead, so you could tie me, which would be fun, kind of interesting.
I could tie you. Yeah, I could tie you.
After a year, but, you know, I got to go with my gut. And I go for it all. And I say, okay, Samoa Joe is a champion that is somebody that is worthy. Do I think he retains? My gut tells me that what's best for business is to give it to the hottest guy, which is Swerve. Mm-hmm. You know, in mm-hmm. my mind, I say that Swerve Strickland is somebody that has an opportunity to be a star, and he's the most over guy. I think this is the time to do it, and why not? And in my mind, I say Samoa Joe is a great transitional champion, and you don't even have to have him get pinned. You have Swerve beat Hangman, and that's an opportunity that you get to kind of get the guy who's the most over. And I just think that you have to have a reset because Samoa Joe is great, but I think that you need him in the chase, a little more violent, where Swerve wins it, and he's celebrating, and then you give him like 3 minutes of celebrating, and then Samoa Joe comes in and whoops his ass, and you get a feud. And then you have Hangman still involved in the mix as well. But I just think when you look at it, Samoa Joe, is he going to put asses in seats? I mean, if you're – and here's what's crazy is that I think the wrestler, the booker in me would say just keep it on Samoa Joe and then have some kind of wonky finish and move storylines along. But the businessman in me, and that's what kills me in these predictions – tells me that Swerve is going to put asses in seats. And when you look at it, if attendance is down, interest is down, what do? You put the belt on the guy that gets the most cheers. I want to see the celebration on Wednesday with Prince Nana coming out and the big celebration with Swerve. So it has to be Swerve, in my opinion.
So while I don't think that you are wrong, I think Swerve is probably the best choice here. I'm going to go with Hangman. And my thought is you can have Swerve chasing Hangman. Swerve ends up losing. He has to go to the back of the line. Hangman wins, and now you've got the Young Bucks and you've got Hangman, and you basically have the heel elite. Like, they've already come back together, but they're doing different things right now. They come back together with the tag team championships and with the AEW World Championship, and you've got the heel elite, and you can have this reign of terror with Hangman up until Swerve can meet him again and this time dethrone him. And think about how much bigger, how much better that will be. And you could probably do it when they're at Wembley in a bigger stadium, a bigger venue, and the roof will just blow. So I'm going to go with Hangman, and I'm going to go with Hangman for long-term booking, even though AEW doesn't do a lot of long-term booking anymore. So if this plays out this way and Hangman wins, I will tie you. It will be one of the greatest comebacks for basically kissing your sister that we've ever seen in your entire life. But the predictions as of now, you've got Swerve winning the AEW World Championship. I've got Hangman. We both have Samoa Joe losing and being a transitional champion. We've got Toni Storm retaining her AEW Women's World Championship. We've got the Young Bucks regaining and regaining the World Tag Team Champions in Sting's last match. We've got Eddie Kingston keeping his AEW Continental Crown Championship. The 8-Man All-Star Scramble for a winner to earn a shot at the AEW World Championship. We both have Wardlow. For the TNT Championship, we've got Christian Cage retaining. In the Tag Team match, we've got FTR beating Jon Moxley and Claudio Castagnoli. We both have Orange Cassidy retaining his AEW International Championship. I am down by 2 points. If I get everything right, I will tie you, and we will tie going into WrestleMania. What was your show of the week this week? I want to give it to SmackDown. I thought SmackDown was interesting.
Absolutely. With The Rock's promo with Roman, SmackDown was the show of the week.
All right, cool. Real short news and notes. You want some news and notes real quick?
Hit me with this week's professional wrestling news and notes. What made your list?
On Monday night, a WWE superstar was detained by the locker room. The Miz took to Instagram where he revealed that he was stuck in an 8x6 locker room in San Jose with multiple people attempting to get him out of the room. Miz said that he attempted to pull the door off the hinges as well as other people kicking the door down with neither option working. It was an interesting Instagram video, to say the least. Miz was eventually freed. They ended up cutting a small hole in the bottom of the door where he crawled out. Now, the bloodline could be getting stronger. WWE has made a recent signing that could really strengthen Roman Reigns' faction. After officially finishing up with New Japan Pro Wrestling at the promotion's New Beginning event on January 24th, Tama Tonga is reportedly WWE bound. Tonga, who spent 14 years in New Japan, previously worked along several current stars in the company during his time in the Bullet Club faction, such as Finn Balor, AJ Styles, Luke Gallows, Carl Anderson. But those are not his only ties Tonga has to WWE. With the 41-year-old considered an extended Anoa'i family member through his father, Haku, whom Roman and The Rock consider an uncle. Speaking on Wrestling Observer Radio, Dave Meltzer said, "He's on his way, don't know the role, very likely at some point could be part of the Bloodline situation because he's considered family by all those guys. So if they need somebody new, it could be him. While Tonga's WWE starting date is not yet known, it does seem likely that he could become a new X Factor in the Bloodline saga." When I read this, I did some creative booking in my head. And the way I could see this setting up, you could have a spinoff where you've got The Rock taking on Roman for the right to be tribal chief. And Tonga could be the X Factor that sides with The Rock, comes in at WrestleMania, causes a bit of an issue, and takes The Rock's side. And you could basically have The Rock, and you could have Tama Tonga. If you wanted to, you could work Jay in on this, and you could set that up versus Roman, Jimmy, and Solo on the other side, and you could basically just go to war with each other, and you could have your story, and you could just kind of have that be the spinoff for Roman after he drops the belt to Cody. It was just a thought I had while I was reading this, and I was like, oh my God, that'll be awesome. Now, Tama Tonga has been in contact with WWE for years now. 4 years they've wanted to sign him. They finally got something worked out. He's interested in whatever they pitched him. So he's going to WWE, and it'll be very exciting. He's a fantastic wrestler. And that's going to be it for this week's news and notes.
Yes, sir. Programming, AEW is going to run the biography of Sergeant Slaughter on Sunday, something that if you're a fan, I thought the last week's debut was great with Triple H and Randy Orton. A&E does a great job of doing these biographies, and they're special. And one last note, if you're a gamer, I might do it. I might drop the money. I dropped the money for 2K23. 2K24 on pre-order, if you download it, comes out midnight on Monday evening at midnight, which will feature CM Punk in the season pass. So it's going to hit you, if you're going to want to get the WrestleMania Deluxe, it's going to hit you probably $140 where you pay for the game, which is $120, and the season pass, which gets you everything, all the packs, all the updates. Listen, if you got the money to drop it, I would do it because you get...
Video games cost that much money now?
$120 $120 gets you a lot, though. You get to play it three days before it releases officially on Friday. You get Lex Luger. You get Mr. Perfect, CM Punk. You get Pat...
What happened to video games costing $40?
Yeah, well, when...
Long time ago, huh?
When you go corporate... Those shareholders say, I don't want $50 profit. I want $600 profit. So blame the shareholders that want all the money. And look, if you figures it costs probably all that much money to license, you know, Post Malone and Pat McAfee. So who gets the charge? The common man. But I'll say this. If you're a fan of entrances, if you're a fan of playing wrestling video games, the last couple 2Ks have been stellar. I still will fire up. And it's fun too, because the community creators just are sick, man. They just create all these characters that you can download. So 2K does a good job of involving community aspects where you can get like Ford Field as an arena. You can get made up championships that are designed by the community. So listen, I think I'm going to do it. I'm on the fence, but we'll see, because next week I figure it's a little investment in a review of 2K, but I want to play Mr. Perfect, Lex Luger, CM Punk. Ugh, I'm such a geek in regards to video games and being a consumer. So there's a chance you guys will get a review of 2K24, which also too, LA Knight's entrance, Rhea Ripley. Oh my goodness. Jade Cargill is going to be in it. We can finally see Jade Cargill wrestle. And, for me, what's going to get it is the history of WrestleMania. It's just basically reliving the matches via video games. So we'll see. if I drop it and if I have space left on my PS5 because I've downloaded so many games for me and the kids. So we'll see how it plays out. Make sure you follow Adam on Twitter at AdamRSTROZ. Our 60 Minutes has come to a close. What a fun podcast. I can't wait to check out Revolution and how it all shakes out. Can't wait to check out Sting's last match. Thank you guys for making us a small part of the internet wrestling community. I love the fact that you guys are catching our wrestling references throughout the week. It makes it for a very fun time. Kenny, thank you for the tweet about Haku and the Shockmaster. That shit always makes me laugh because I always figure that that's how my wrestling career would go. I'd be given a gimmick like the Shockmaster or my debut, I'm stuck in a closet and I can't get out there. For the jock, Adam Strozinski, I am the doc, John Macaroon. Thank you guys for checking out the Detroit Sports Podcast. Shout out to everybody that listens. Can't wait to fire it up next week for the latest edition of the Doc and Jock Wrestling Podcast.